Do you want to hear a story? A scary story? Alright, let the story commence.
Scary Story Show, oh boy!
Kendall Cove by Chris Straub.
Does anyone remember this kid show? It was called Candle Cove, and I must have been 6 or 7. I never found reference to it anywhere, so I think it was on a local station around 1971 or 1972. I lived in Ironton at the time. I don't remember which station, but I do remember that it was on at a weird time, like 4 p.m.
It seems really familiar to me. I grew up outside of Ashland and was 9 years old in 72. Candle Cove. Was it about pirates? I remember a pirate marionette at the mouth of a cave talking to a little girl.
Yes, okay, I'm not crazy. I remember Pirate Percy. I was always kind of scared of him. He looked like he was built from parts of other dolls. Real low budget. His head was an old porcelain baby doll. Looked like an antique that didn't belong on the body. I don't remember what station this was. I don't think it was WTSF, though.
Sorry to resurrect this old thread, but I know exactly what show you mean, Sky Shale. I think Candle Cove ran for a couple of months in 71, not 72. I was 12 and I watched it a few times with my brother. It was channel 58, whatever station that was. My mum would let me switch to it after the news. Let me see what I remember. It took place in Candle Cove, and it was about a little girl who imagined herself to be friends with pirates. The pirate ship was called the Laughingstock. And Pirate Percy wasn't a very good pirate because he got scared too easily. And there was Calliope music constantly playing. I don't remember the girl's name. Janice, or Jade or something. I think it was Janice.
Thanks, Jaren! Memories flooded back when you mentioned the Laughingstock in Channel 58. I remember the bow of the ship was a wooden smiling face with the lower jaw submerged. It looked like it was swallowing the sea, and it had that awful Ed Wynn voice and laugh. I especially remember how jarring it was when they switched from the wooden plastic model to the foam puppet version of the head that talked.
I remember now, too. Do you remember this part, Sky Shale?
You have to go inside.
Ugh. Mike, I got a chill reading that. Yes, I remember. That's what the ship always told Percy when there was a spooky place he had to go in. Like a cave or a dark room where the treasure was. And the camera would push in on Laughingstock's face with each pause.
You have to go inside.
With his two eyes askew and that flopping foam jaw and the fishing line that opened and closed it. Ugh! It just looked so cheap and awful. You guys remember the villain? He had a face that was just a handlebar mustache above really tall, narrow teeth.
I honestly thought the villain was Pirate Percy. I was about 5 when the show was on. Nightmare
Fuel.
That
wasn't the villain, the puppet with the mustache. That was the villain's sidekick, Horace Horrible. He had a monocle too, but it was on top of the mustache. I used to think that meant he had only one eye. But yeah, the villain was another marionette, the Skin Taker. I can't believe what they used to let us watch back then.
Jesus H. Christ, the Skin Taker. What kind of a kid show were we watching? I seriously could not even look at the screen when the Skin Taker showed up. He just descended out of nowhere on his strings. Just a dirty skeleton wearing that brown top hat and cape. And his glass eyes that were too big for his skull. Christ almighty.
Wasn't his top hat and cloak all sewn up crazily? Was that supposed to be children's skin?
Yeah, I think so. Remember, his mouth didn't open and close, his jaw just slid back and forth? I remember the little girl said, "Why does your mouth move like that?" And the skin taker didn't look at the girl, but at the camera and said, "To grind your skin."
Oh, I'm so relieved that other people remember this terrible show. I used to have this awful memory. A bad dream I had where the opening jingle ended, the show faded in from black, and all the characters were there. But the camera was just cutting to each of their faces, and they were just screaming. And the puppets and marionettes were flailing spastically, and just all screaming. Screaming. The girl was just moaning and crying like she'd been through hours of this. I woke up many times from that nightmare. I used to wet the bed when I had it.
I don't think that was a dream. I remember that. I remember that was an episode.
No. Not possible. There was no plot or anything. I mean, literally, just standing in place crying and screaming for the whole show.
Maybe I'm manufacturing the memory because you said that, but I swear to God, I remember seeing what you described. They just screamed.
Oh God, yes. The little girl, Janice. I remember seeing her shake. And the skin taker screaming through his gnashing teeth. His jaw careening so widely, I thought it would come off its wire hinges. I turned it off and it was the last time I watched. I ran to tell my brother and we didn't have the courage to turn it back on.
I visited my mom today at the nursing home. I asked her about when I was little in the early 70s, when I was 8 or 9, and if she remembered a kid show, Candle Cove. She said she was surprised that I could remember that, and I asked why, and she said because I used to think that it was so strange that you said, "I'm going to watch Candle Cove now, Mom." And then you would tune the TV to static and just watch dead air for 30 minutes. You had a big imagination with your little pirate show.
Black Snow by Ryuri.
The following is a recorded copy of Jacob Connolly's written journal, which was found in the snow near the top of Mount Everest on July 12th, 2012. December 20th, 2011, 3:23 p.m. Flight just landed in Kathmandu, 16 hours, 7,431 miles, and two extremely annoying, loud, drunk, middle-aged women later. I wish I could have ignored their constant chatting on the way over, but an iPhone's battery only lasts so long. Plus, I've already seen Mission Impossible, the in-flight movie, too many times. I managed to get to my hotel easy enough. The taxi driver understood English, maybe a little too well. He talked the entire drive. He talked about all the fun and enjoyable attributes of the wonderful capital of Nepal. I tried to explain that none of it really mattered because I was going to spend little to no time in the actual city. The purpose of my stay was to climb Mount Everest. Sounds dangerous, doesn't it? Yeah, I know. I got the whole speech from my mom. No matter how old I get, she treats me like a child. The whole purpose of the trip is because of the danger. I'm going with my best friend, PJ. See? He's done this all before. And he returned and told everyone his amazing story of his climb to the top of the world. A few drinks later, and I agreed to do it with him. His speech about me never doing anything exciting and living my whole life inside and being alone all the time was pervasive, hurtful. But I'm too good of a friend with PJ to punch him. So that's how I am where I am now. Oh. And the reason for the journal? It was PJ's idea. He wants us to look back on this trip and remember all the exciting details. Well, PJ, I hope reading through this book is everything as exciting as you wanted it to be. December 20th, 2011. 6:15 p.m. Ugh. The suit is so uncomfortable. PJ wanted to take me to a restaurant that he went to the last time that he was here. The problem is that it's black tie, and I didn't bring any ties, so he made me wear his extra one. Who brings two suits on a mountain climbing trip? Whatever. He's taken so long to get ready, maybe he'll miss our reservation, go to a bar or something. December 20th, 2011, 11:47 p.m. Hallelujah! After the horrifying experience of wearing a suit for 2.5 hours during a 4-course meal, PJ and I resided at a local bar, where I stripped myself of my jacket and tie and proceeded to down 4 beers in the course of 20 minutes. I'm typing this on my phone, so I'll have to write this into my journal when I have a chance. I just wanted to document the night before I forget it. December 21st, 2011. 4:09 p.m. I'm so pissed. Because we were out drinking all night, we missed our group to go up. See, we were part of a group of people with a tour that was going to lead us up because we're not very experienced mountain climbers. It's the same thing PJ did his first time here, but we missed the fucking group. However, PJ claimed he knew where the group took a break, and he said that he knew a shortcut on how to get there. The only problem is that we had to go up places of the mountain that were too steep to climb. Well, I guess on a positive note, I learned how to actually climb up the mountain, with ropes, picks, and everything. I guess it took too long to climb or something, because when we got up there, the group was gone. There's no way I'm heading back down. I've already told PJ that. I'm not spending another grand on a new group that leaves in 6 days once the other one returns. I'm not spending money on another 6 nights in a hotel. We have supplies. PJ knows the way. You're gonna keep climbing. That's final. December 21st, 2011. 8:16 p.m. I'm pretty sure my feet are bleeding. I know I'm in shape enough to do this. I guess the bad start of the day threw me off. Anyway, I'm exhausted. We did so much climbing today, I'm really surprised we didn't catch up to the group. It's a lot colder up here than I imagined. Don't get me wrong, I'm not stupid. I knew it'd be cold, I did my research. PJ made sure of that. He hounded me for an entire week before we left. He wanted me to be an expert on climbing and mountains. Just thinking about the endless nights I looked at those books and Wikipedia pages makes my head hurt. I'm wearing a parka and plenty of sweaters, and we have a fire, but I still feel really cold. It's weird. I almost feel like the breeze is swelling from my insides, shaking my core like there's a breeze through my bones. The funny thing is, even though it's constantly below freezing and it snows from time to time, we still saw a river today. It was going down the mountain. PJ said that it was from the snow higher up melting and running down. We filled up our water bottles there, but there was still some parts of it frozen, like a thin sheet of ice on top of rushing water. There are some things in nature I just don't understand. Oh yeah, even though PJ said not to, I brought my phone. He said he wanted it to be just him and me alone, just two friends bonding on the adventure of a lifetime. I think he just said that to make light of the fact that we lost the group. Still though, maybe he was right. Maybe it was rude of me to bring my phone, but it doesn't even matter. The sub-zero temperature is killing its battery. It probably won't even last the entire climb up. I think I'll just turn it off, save the battery. Who knows? Maybe we'll need it later. December 22nd, 2011. 8:46 a.m. I could barely even sleep last night. The winds are so strong, they nearly ripped the entire tent off the ground. PJ slept like a rock. Other than him going to the bathroom every hour, I was up the whole night and never heard him. But without fail, the tent would be wide open every hour or so. I almost froze to death. I mean, seriously. He goes to the bathroom 5 times in one night? At least I think it was 5. Maybe more. I asked him about it, but he said that he never once got up during the night. Apparently, he brought with him some over-the-counter sleeping meds. These little pink tablets that he crushed up and took right before heading to bed. He was out like a light. That much may be true, but I still think he keeps leaving for the bathroom. How else could the tent keep opening up? I didn't do it. I think he's just embarrassed about it. Maybe he has diarrhea. I respect him enough not to mention it again. I mean, even though I had the horrible sleep that I did, PJ demanded that we woke up when the sun rose. I didn't understand why. Sure, if we wake up later, it'll take more time to climb, but we have enough food and water to last 10 days. December 22nd, 2011. 9:02 a.m. I was so out of it this morning, and I burned our breakfast. We were going to cook some bacon and eggs, but I wasn't paying attention. I dropped the pan that we were cooking it in. My vision was kind of blurry, and I picked up the pan on its side, and not only did that cause the food to fall into the fire, but I also burnt my hand. PJ was furious. Not only did we waste food, we're taking more time to eat, which means we waste daylight. I thought being on this trip with him would be fun, but he's taking everything way too seriously and keeps bossing me around. If the entire trip is like this, then I'm just going to turn around and climb down off the mountain. This trip couldn't possibly get any worse. There's something else written, which was obviously added later. Wrong. December 22nd, 2011. 1:08 p.m. No sign of the group yet. We're halfway up the mountain, and there's no sign of anyone, actually. When I did all my research on Mount Everest, it said that there were a bunch of camps scattered throughout the mountain, but we haven't seen any yet. I asked PJ, and he said that we were going on an amended route to catch up with the group. This used parts of the mountain less traveled. Even so, I'm surprised we haven't seen anybody at all. It's offsetting. The whipping winds mixed with the dead cold silence. It makes you feel so alone. I don't even have PJ to talk to. He's always far in front of me, going at a pace that I can't keep up with. I ask him to slow down, but he keeps saying, "We have to keep going! We have to find the group!" I'm worried. He may have gotten us lost. December 23rd, 2011. 7:50 a.m. Woke up early this morning to make up for yesterday's blunder. PJ's been acting strange. Normally, I wouldn't hear the end of his constant nagging about a fuck-up that bad, but he hasn't said a word. Not that I'm complaining. Well, I kind of am. He hasn't been talking to me almost at all this whole trip. I've tried talking and making jokes to lighten the mood from the whole "we're fucking lost" thing, but he doesn't even glance at me, let alone say anything. In fact, the only time that I've heard his voice is when he's ordering me around, and last night, I could have sworn I heard him talking to himself. This doesn't seem like PJ at all. December 23rd, 2011. 8:12 p.m. I'm shaking. Just thinking about it makes me want to subtly leap. Subtly weep. I'm scared. I'm distraught. I can't think straight. We found the group. What was left of them, judging from the numbers of tents, most of the people were gone. The ones we found were dead, slaughtered, blood everywhere, guts ripped out of bodies, cast aside and sprawled out on the icy rock, snow-soaked red. One poor guy looked so much like my younger brother. He even had the same pale blue eyes. He was completely ripped into two pieces. Set out in the snow, his organs lying frozen to the ground. His face was that of terror. Agony. He looked so much like my brother. All their stuff was there. And the person... No, the thing that committed this ungodly act was... had no intention to steal their items. No, it had no other goal than to reap, to massacre these people. And PJ, that bastard had the largest grin on his face that I've ever seen. He enjoyed the horrific view. It was entertainment to his now apparent twisted and sinister mind. He wanted to keep going. He wanted to get us killed, too. I was not staying with him another moment. I left him there. I headed back down myself. My phone was gone when I looked for it. I guess he found it and took it away from me. He turns to a damn lunatic. I'm not sleeping tonight. No way am I not letting PJ or whatever killed these people get to me. I'm not closing my eyes until I'm on a plane and heading back home. December 24th, 2011, 1:02 a.m. PJ's dead. I killed him. I heard him coming. I crawled out of the tent, startled and staring off at him in the dark. I told him not to come any closer, and he didn't for a while. He just stared at me. I couldn't see his eyes. I just saw the blackness surrounding his face, letting him blend into the night. It was silent. Not even the wind could be heard. The crackling of the fire subsided, and it was just silent. Until he spoke. And I really wish he didn't speak. He told me that there was something up here with us. On the mountain. Something awful. Its purpose was nothing more than to kill and torture souls. It fed on people, consumed them in the most grotesque ways, sucking on their insides, gouging out their eyes, gnawing on their crimson-stained bones. The last time PJ went up, it found and killed his whole group, but he called out to it, made it a deal. He said that he would bring someone up to take his place, and he'd give them to it. He said he'd do it every year until the day he died. And he chose me. He went back and convinced me to climb up with him. He was going to let it kill me, and then he'd go back down and do it again. He even had the nerve to say that he didn't know who had the worst end of the deal. Me, because I get devoured by a hell beast, or him for having to make the climb with some new meat every year. I couldn't let him do it. I charged him, I knocked him on the ground, and I started beating him. I hit him and hit him until my knuckles bled, and I kept going. The cracking in my knuckles was muffled by the flesh pounding into bone. To make sure he was finished, I pushed him off a nearby ledge. And he hit the ground with a satisfying crack. His lifeless body surrounded by shadows and black snow. It's done. Over. PJ's body, and I'm too far from the top for the creature to get to me. I'm getting off this mountain. I'm warning every one of the horrors that are up here. December 24th, 2011. 11:54 p.m. What a hell of a Christmas Eve this has been. No problems on the way down so far. I think I've finally gotten the hang of this hiking thing. I'm about halfway down the mountain, and at this rate, I should be home and surrounded by my family in no time. I miss my mom and my dad so much. I need nothing more right now than a loving embrace from my family. And I have to call my brother and tell him I love him. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm way too excited to climb down. I went almost a day without eating until now. I'm wolfing down this sandwich. It's really good. And about the single best thing I've had since I've been up here. My dad taught me how to make them. What you do is, you take the ham. Wow, I just got really lightheaded. I guess all this hiking has really caught up to me. I feel so drowsy. I can barely keep my eyes open. Fuck. Something just fell out of my sandwich. A little pink pen. written in blood on the final entry was two words. Merry Christmas.
Laughing Jack by Snuffbomb.
It was a nice summer day. My 5-year-old son, James, was playing outside in the backyard of our suburban home. James has always been a quiet boy. He plays by himself, mostly. He never had many friends. But he's always had a wild imagination. I was in the kitchen feeding our dog Fido when I heard what sounded like James talking to someone in the backyard. I'm not sure who it could be that he was talking to. Could he have finally made a friend? Being a single dad, it's hard for me to always keep an eye on my son, so I decided to go outside and check on him. When I went out into the backyard, I was a bit confused because James was the only person back there. Was he talking to himself? I could have sworn I heard another voice. James! It's time to come inside! I called out to him. He came inside and sat down at the kitchen table. It was about lunchtime, so I decided to make him a turkey sandwich. James, who are you talking to out there? I asked. James looked up for a moment. I was playing with my new friend, he said, smiling. I poured some milk and continued to pry, as any good father would. Does your friend have a name? Why didn't you, ask him to have lunch with us? I asked. James stared at me for a moment before replying. His name is Laughing Jack. I was a bit taken aback by what he said. Oh? That's a strange name. What does your friend look like? I asked, a bit confused. He's a clown. He has long hair and a big swirly cone nose. He's got long arms and baggy pants with striped socks. He always smiles. I realized my son was talking about an imaginary friend. I suppose it was normal for kids his age to have imaginary friends, especially when he has no real kids to play with. Probably just a phase. The rest of the day went as usual, and it was starting to get late, so I put James to bed, tucked him in, gave him a kiss, and made sure to turn on his nightlight before I closed the door. I was pretty tired myself, so I decided to go to bed not long after. I had an awful nightmare. It was dark. I was in some kind of a run-down amusement park. I was scared, running through an endless field of empty tents, broken-down rides, and abandoned game huts. The whole place had a horrible look to it. Everything was black and white. The prized stuffed animals all hung from nooses in the game huts, all with sick grins stitched into their faces. It felt like the whole park was looking at me, even though there wasn't any living thing in sight. And then suddenly, I began to hear music play. The sounds of Pop Goes the Weasel being played on a squeak box echoed through the park. It was hypnotizing. I followed its tune to the circus tent almost in a trance, unable to stop my legs from moving forward. It was pitch black. The only light came from a single spotlight shining on the center of the big top. As I walked towards the light, the music slowed down. I found myself singing along, unable to stop. All around the mulberry bush, the monkey chased the weasel. The monkey thought 'twas all in fun. And the music stopped right before its climax. And suddenly, the light shot on. The intensity of the light was practically blinding. All I could see was a small dark silhouette shuffle towards me. Then another one appeared. And another? And another. There was a dozen of them, all coming towards me. I couldn't move. My legs were frozen, and all I could do was watch as the haunting figures drew near me. As they got closer, I could see they were children. As I looked at each one, I noticed that they were all horribly disfigured and mutilated. Some had cuts all over their bodies, others were severely burned, and others were missing limbs, even eyes. The children enveloped me, clawing at my flesh, dragging me to the ground, and tearing inside me. As the children tore me apart and I faded away, all I could hear was laughter. Horrible. Evil. Awful laughter. I woke up the next morning in a cold sweat. After taking a few deep breaths, I looked over and saw that a few of James's action figures were positioned facing me on the top of my nightstand. I sighed. James had probably woken up early and put these here. I gathered up the toys, made my way over to James's room. However, when I opened the door, James was sound asleep. I just shrugged and placed the toys back in his toy box, headed out to the living room. A little while later, James woke up and I made him breakfast. He was quiet, seemed a bit groggy, perhaps he didn't sleep very well. I decided to ask him about the toys. James, honey, did you put the toys in Dad's room this morning? His eyes shot up at me for a moment, and then quickly glanced down at his cereal. Laughing Jack did it. I rolled my eyes and responded, "Well, you tell Laughing Jack to keep the toys in your room." James nodded and finished up his breakfast, then decided to go out and play in the backyard. I went to relax in the living room and must have dozed off because I woke up a couple hours later. Shit! I need to go check on James. I was a bit worried that it had been over 2 hours and I hadn't checked on him. I stepped out into the backyard, but James wasn't there anymore. Oh, I was getting nervous, so I called him out. James! James, where are you? Just then, I heard a giggle coming from the front yard. I rushed through the gate and around the front of the house. James was sitting on the sidewalk. I breathed a sigh of relief and walked over to him. James, how many times have I told you to stay in the back? James, what are you eating? James looked up at me, and then reached into his pocket and pulled out a handful of hard candies in all colors. This made me very nervous. James, who gave you that candy? James just stared at me, not speaking. James, tell Dad who gave you that candy. James hung his head low and said, Laughing Jack gave it to me. My heart sunk. I knelt down and looked him in the eye. James, I've had enough of this damn Laughing Jack thing. He's not real. Now, this is a very serious situation. I need to know who gave you that candy. I could see my son's eyes tearing up. But Dad, Laughing Jack did give me the candy. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. James had never lied to me, but what he's telling me is impossible. I made him spit out the candy and throw the rest away. James appeared to be fine. Maybe I'm just overreacting. After all, he could have gotten it from Tom and Linda from next door, or Mr. Walker down the street. Either way, I'm going to have to keep a closer eye on James. That night, I put James to bed as usual and decided to go to bed early myself. Suddenly, I was awoken by a loud bang coming from the kitchen. I sprung out of bed and hurried down the stairs. When I got to the kitchen, I was horrified. Everything on the counters had been thrown to the floor. Our dog Fido hung dead from the light fixture. His stomach was cut open and stuffed with candy, the same type that James was eating earlier that day. Shock was quickly broken by a sharp scream coming from James's room, followed by loud crashes. I quickly grabbed the knife from the drawer and moved up the stairs with a speed that only a father whose child was in danger could have. I burst through the door and flicked on the lights. Everything in the room was knocked over and tossed to the floor, and my poor son was in his bed crying and shaking with fear. A pool of urine stained the sheets.
I scooped up my child and ran out of the house, went next door to Tom and Linda's house, and luckily they were still awake. They let me use the phone to call the police. It didn't take them long to arrive, and I explained what happened. They looked at me as if I was crazy. They searched the house, but all they found was the dead dog and two trashed rooms. The officer told me that someone had probably gotten into the house and done this right before making a quick escape, when they heard me coming up the stairs. I knew it wasn't true. All the doors were locked. None of the windows were open. Whatever was in my house didn't come from outside. The next day, James stayed inside. I didn't want him to leave my sight. I went to the garage, found my old baby monitor, and set it up in his room. If anything comes into his room tonight, I was going to be able to hear it. I went to the kitchen, grabbed the largest knife from the drawer, put it on my nightstand. Imaginary friend or not, I'm not letting anything hurt my little boy. And soon enough, night came. I put James to bed. He was afraid, but I promised him that I wouldn't let anything hurt him. I tucked him in, gave him a kiss, turned on the nightlight, and before closing the door, I whispered to him, "Good night, James. I love you." I tried to stay up as long as I could, but after a few hours, I felt myself drifting off. My baby would be safe for the night, and I needed to sleep. And just as I lay my head down on the pillow, I heard a soft noise come from the baby monitor that I had put on my nightstand. At first, it sounded like interference, like the kind a radio would make. Then it turned into a soft moan. Was James asleep? Then I heard it. The laugh from my nightmare, that horrible laugh. I sprung up from the bed and grabbed the knife from under my pillow. I rushed over to James's room and creaked the door open. I tried the light switch, but it wouldn't come on. I took a step in, and I could feel the warm, thick liquid on my feet. Suddenly, James's nightlight came on, and I could see... I could see the absurd horror laid out in front of me. James's body was nailed up on the wall. The nails pierced through his hands and feet, and his chest was... And his chest was cut wide open, and his organs hung down to the floor, and his eyes and tongue had been removed along with most of his teeth, and I was disgusted. I could hardly believe that this was my baby boy. And then I heard it again. That soft, desperate moan. God. James was still alive. My baby, my poor boy, in such pain, could barely cling to life, and I ran across the room and I vomited on the floor, but my sickness was interrupted by a horrible cackle coming from behind me, and I spun around, and while I was still wiping bile from my mouth, then out of the shadows emerged the fiend responsible for the horror. Laughing Jack. His ghost-white skin and matted black hair hung down to his shoulders. He had piercing white eyes surrounded by black rings. His twisted smile revealed a row of sharp, jagged teeth, and his skin didn't look like skin at all. It almost looked like rubber or plastic. He wore a patchy black and white clown outfit with striped sleeves and socks. His body itself was grotesque. His long arms hung down past his waist. The way he was poised made him look almost boneless, like a rag doll. He let out a sickening laugh, as if to let me know that he was pleased with my reaction to his work. And I turned around slowly in front of James and began to laugh even more at the horrific sight that he laid out. That was enough to shake me from my terror, and I snapped, "Get away from him, you bastard!" I rushed at the monster, raised the knife above my head, and stabbed down at him. But as soon as the knife touched him, he disappeared like a cloud of black smoke. The knife passed right through him and pierced James' still beating heart, splashing the warm blood on my face. No. What have I done? My baby. I've killed my baby. I immediately fell to my knees. I couldn't hear. I could hear sirens in the distance growing louder, and my boy, my sweet baby boy. I promised that Daddy would protect you, but I failed. I'm sorry, James. I'm so sorry. Police soon arrived and found me in front of my son, still wielding the knife covered in my baby's blood, and the trial was short. Insanity. I was placed in... Feropolis House for the Criminally Insane, where I had been for the past 2 months. It's not bad here. The only reason I'm awake now is because someone... Someone is playing Pop Goes the Weasel outside my window. I'll talk to the orderlies about it in the morning.
The Strangest Security Tape I've Ever Seen by Power Hawk Mash.
I work at a gas station in rural Pennsylvania. It's a boring job, but it's pretty easy. Pays all right. A few weeks ago, this new guy started. I'll call him Jeremy. Jeremy is weird. He's about 25 or 26, and he hardly speaks. But he's got the creepiest laugh I've ever heard. My boss and I have both noticed this, but it's never been a problem, so there's not much we can do about it. Customers have never complained about him, and he's always done his job fairly well. Up until a few weeks ago, anyway. And that's when things started going missing. Employee theft can be a problem in any business that sells consumer goods, and there's only one person working at this time at the gas station. It's a pretty small place. About 2 weeks ago, my boss started noticing that we were short on motor oil. At first, it was a few containers at a time, then entire shelves and boxes from the back room. Pretty soon, entire shipments would be gone the next day after we got them, and it would always be right after Jeremy's shifts. My boss had checked the security tapes from every single night that he worked, but he could never catch him in the act. Jeremy would lock up at closing, and the motor oil would be gone the next day. My boss usually takes the tapes home with him to try and catch Jeremy stealing, but his daughter has a softball game last night, so he asked me to watch the tape for him. He offered to pay me overtime, under the table, so obviously I took the offer. There are three cameras, so he gave me three different tapes to check. I figured it would be a long night, but I'm trying to save up for a vacation, so I really needed the money. I took the tapes home, popped them in an old VCR, and sat back. 2 days ago, the last time he worked, Jeremy started at 4 p.m. Everything seemed pretty normal at first. He counted up his drawer, switched off with the girl who had worked before him, and waited for a customer. The first person who came in was Mrs. Templeton. The timestamp on the video read 4:03, a regular. She picked up her cigarettes and a newspaper and paid with a 20. Nothing unusual there. The next customer was a local guy named Ron. He drives a motorcycle, usually comes in every few days. He filled up his tank, got a bag of beef jerky, paid with a credit card, and then left. Next was some guy with a cowboy hat. I'd never seen him before, but we get plenty of strangers passing through, just like any gas station. He got $40 worth of diesel fuel, paid with a $100 bill, Ed went on his way. I sat back and sighed. The only thing more boring than doing this job is watching someone else do it. My boss's offer was enough to keep me watching, though, so I left the tape on. Everything seemed pretty normal. I had a feeling that if Jeremy was stealing motor oil, he knew we were suspicious of him by now. I didn't expect him to be dumb enough to let us catch him on camera. Things stayed boring and routine until about 5 o'clock. At 5:03, Mrs. Templeton came back in. She must have forgotten something. But she didn't. She bought the same pack of cigarettes as before. And the same newspaper. She paid with another 20. That's odd, I thought. But then again, she's a little absent-minded. I thought Jeremy should have told her that she already got smokes, but it's not against the rules to sell somebody the same thing twice. That's when Ron came in again. He bought another tank of gas for his motorcycle again. I let him check the outer camera because I thought maybe he had another car that he wanted to fill up. And the same pack of beef jerky. He paid with his credit card again. No big deal. I figured this was just a weird coincidence. Mrs. Templeton forgot, and Ron probably owned more than one Harley. That's when the guy in the cowboy hat came back in. I felt a chill run down my spine. Don't get diesel. Don't get diesel. But he did. He got $40 worth of diesel, and paid with another $100 bill. Every move he made was identical to his first visit, right down to the way he scratched his nose before walking out. Either the guy was rich, owned a lot of trucks, and just moved into town, or something really bizarre was happening. I kept watching. Every customer for the next hour was the same as before, every single one. I was seriously freaked out, and then at 6:03, Mrs. Templeton walked back in. She bought her cigarettes and newspaper again, and paid with a $20 bill. I thought I was going to lose it. I only watched another half hour before I started fast-forwarding through the rest. It was all the same. Every customer would come in at the exact same time, exactly 1 hour apart. Now, I know what you're thinking. That sneaky motherfucker Jeremy had messed with the tapes. He had run a loop of his first hour of business over and over and over. And that wasn't the case. There are windows at the cash register area that the camera covers. And I watched the sunlight fade as time ran on. Jeremy's routine didn't loop. He swept, mopped, restocked, and did all his duties exactly how you would expect. But the same customers kept coming in. I was panicking at this point. Something was seriously wrong with what I was seeing, and I had no explanation for it. I skipped ahead to when he locked up and walked out to his car. He hadn't stolen anything, but he kept watching, just to make sure. I fast-forwarded one last time to about midnight. Exactly 12:03, out of nowhere, Jeremy's face popped up on the camera. I don't mean he moved his head into view, I mean, 1 second the store was empty. The next second, his face was all I could see. He wasn't looking at the camera. He was looking at me. I'm sure of it. I screamed and fumbled for the remote. By the time I grabbed it, he was gone. Just as soon as he had left. One frame he was there, the next he wasn't. My hands were shaking like crazy, but I popped in another tape. The other indoor camera showed the back area, by the cash register. And I'd be able to see how he got up to put his face in camera like that. I skipped ahead to 12:03. But there was nothing. I would have been able to see him standing on a chair or something on this tape, but he wasn't there. I didn't see him enter the store at all after he left. It's like he wasn't really there. He doesn't know the security code, and no alarms were triggered that night after he locked up. What I did see, however, was that at 12:03, the motor oil vanished off the shelf. All of it. same as Jeremy's face. 1 second it was there, the next it wasn't. I turned the tape off and went to bed. I didn't get a wink of sleep. My body was exhausted right now, but my mind was racing. That tape was undoubtedly the creepiest, most disturbing thing I've ever seen in my life. I work in a few hours. My boss asked me to bring the tapes back in and let him know what I found, but really, what the hell am I gonna say? Jeremy works the night shift tonight, directly after me, and the plan is for my boss to come in just before I leave and confront him with me, as I'm supposed to be the one who caught him stealing. I have no idea what I'm going to do. I suppose I have to show my boss the tapes, but I don't want to watch them with him. I never want to see something like that again. I can't get the image of Jeremy just smiling directly into the camera out of my mind. It was the creepiest look I've ever seen on another human being's face. Anyway, I'm going to get some last-minute sleep before I have to go in and deal with this. I'll let you guys know what happens. Update. 2:49 p.m. Updating from my phone. Apologies in advance for errors. My boss just finished watching the last of the tapes. I told him what to expect, but you really can't prepare someone for something like that. He's scared shitless. I am too. And Jeremy's due to come in at 4. We've got a little over an hour to get this shit together, but neither one of us knows what to say to him. Is he just a fucked up guy who likes to steal motor oil and scare the shit out of people? Or is he something else? I don't know if this is crazy, but does anyone think he could have anything to do with the time loop? My boss says he never noticed anything like this in the other tapes, but the way he popped up in this one made me think he knew I'd be watching. It's like he wanted me to see, like he was showing off or something. The way he smiled into the camera like a little kid showing you a sandcastle, something like that. I don't know. I probably sound crazy, I'm sure. I sure feel the part. I'm going to talk to my boss some more. We have to calm ourselves down and figure out how to handle this. I'll update again tonight, but I have a really bad feeling about how this is going to play out. Update. 4:33 p.m. No sign of Jeremy. Tried calling him, but his phone's been disconnected. We're calling the police. Update. 5:33 p.m. No sign of Jeremy. Tried calling him, but his phone's been disconnected. We're calling the police. Update. 6:33 p.m. No sign of Jeremy. Tried calling him, but his phone's been disconnected. We're calling the police. Update. 7:33 p.m. No sign of Jeremy. Tried calling him, but his phone's been disconnected. We're calling the police. Update. 8:33 p.m. No sign of Jeremy. Tried calling him, but his phone's been disconnected. We're calling the police. Update. 10:59 p.m. Holy shit. I just got home and I saw my previous updates. Things make less sense now than ever. Here's what I can tell you. I went to work, Jeremy never showed up, my boss and I decided to call the police, as you're well aware. When I picked up the phone to call, the sun went out. I shit you not, that's what I thought happened. Apparently, I blacked out for exactly 5 hours because when I looked at the clock, it was 9:30. I think I got stuck in Jeremy's time loop, and then I snapped out of it at the exact moment I blacked out. If that makes sense, but that's when things get really weird. My boss was right next to me when I blacked out, ready to corroborate my story to the cops. When I came to, the phone was in my hand, but it was dead. Not even a dial tone. My boss was still right there, but he wasn't moving. He was standing up, but frozen. I looked at the clock again, and it wasn't moving. The second hand was stuck on the 12. It was 9:33 exactly. The clock on the register, computer screen, it wasn't moving either. My phone was frozen. There was even a customer at the register waiting for my boss to get him cigarettes. I'm betting that would have been his fifth pack of the day. I got the fuck out of there, didn't lock up, didn't turn the lights out, and sorry guys, I didn't grab the security tapes to upload to the internet. Believe me, that was the last thing on my mind. The gas station is on a major highway and cars were parked all around it, except they weren't parked, they were frozen. The people inside were sitting still as wax statues. I got in my car and prayed that it would start, and thankfully it did. About halfway home, time started up again. The static from the radio turned into music like it was supposed to be, and from what I could tell by listening to the host talking in between songs, no one noticed the time had frozen. Whatever it was, I was the only one that did. Well, I'm sure Jeremy noticed as well. I still have no clue where he is or what he's doing. I'm hiding in my room and calling the police again in the morning. I don't know if I ever got through to them before, or if I did, whether they took me seriously. I'm scared for my life at this point. I'll update tomorrow. If I can. Final update. 10:33 a.m. I finally fell asleep last night around 4. I have no idea how I did. I guess exhaustion finally got the best of me. This morning, I woke up to my phone ringing. It was my boss. He'd been calling me since about 6. He woke up when the time turned back on last night and immediately called the cops. They came by to see what was wrong, and he told them everything, and the police around here are all small-time guys. They were more concerned with the missing motor oil than anything. But my boss figured he would take it, as long as he had their attention. They decided to go looking for Jeremy. We kept all our employees' applications on file, and since Jeremy just started working there, he was easy to find. They checked the address on it and headed over to his house. And you're not gonna believe what they found. The address Jeremy listed on his application was an empty lot. Or at least, now it is. There used to be a house there, but it burnt down in 1993. Being a small town, almost everyone remembers that fire. A family of 4 used to live there way back when. Rumor has it, they had an estranged son who they never really talked about, but I can't say for sure if that's true. What I can say is that after an insurance investigation, the fire was ruled an arson. The entire house was soaked in oil and torched with a Molotov cocktail. The entire family was sleeping when it happened. None of them survived. They never caught the guy who did it. Rumor has it that when they tried to contact the estranged son, no one could find him. Anyway, my boss called and told me this, and I freaked out. Then he asked me to come to the gas station. What are you, crazy? I said. But he assured me that the cops were there with him. Then he dropped a bomb. The FBI were also in town, and they were going to talk to me one way or another. So I might as well come in. It was about 7:15, and I wanted to go back to bed, but I figured I wasn't about to sleep much more anyway, so I went down. 4 men in suits greeted me and told me to have a seat. We went over everything 2 or 3 times until they got all the details down. I told them about Jeremy, the security tape, last night at work, everything. Finally, after I finished, one of the agents said, "Christ, we got another one on our hands." Then they made me sign a bunch of papers saying I wouldn't tell anyone about what happened, so I can't say much more. I might be breaking the law by just posting this. So now I'm home. I'm not sure what to do with myself. that agent's words when they told me the story are going to haunt me for the rest of my life. Anyway, I've got to go. I've got some errands to run today, and then I have to go into work and pick up some tapes. My boss usually takes the tapes home with him to try and catch Jeremy stealing, but his daughter has a softball game last night, so he asked me to watch the tape for him. He offered to pay me overtime under the table, so obviously I took the offer. The oil, anyway, goes missing right after his shifts. I figure I'll just watch the tapes, catch him in the act, and that'll be that.
Thank you for listening to the Scary Story Show today. I have been Jeff Bridges, and thank you to my producer, Armando Iannucci.